Hello and welcome to the K-Scope podcast. Billy Reeves here, the award-winning duo I Am The Morning, Marjana Simkina and Gleb Kolyadin, have a new album coming out on K-Scope on August the 2nd. It's called The Bell, and this, before we hear from Marjana, is Song of Psych. I Am The Morning, Song of Psych. There's a brand new animated promo video for that online right now. And recently, I had a cold banana coffee with Marjana. And of course, inevitably, we started by talking about premature burial.
Oh God, that's my favourite subject. Thank you for bringing it up.
Lay it on me. How does premature burials inform your art, Marjana?
So when I was around 11 years old, my parents took me to this like history camp where people were, doing this reenactments of different historical events. And one of them, and I was kind of playing in a team of mortuary people. And as a part of what they did, they reenact the funeral. So they actually dug a grave. They put a person there, put some plastic on it, and then actually put soil on top of them.
And you were 11 years old?
11 or maybe 13.
Right, with your sofa.
Like that.
With your sofa.
Something
what
like
fun.
That. So I think I just remembered about that maybe last week. And I was like, so this is where this comes from. Oh. Okay, that explains a lot. And there is one of my favorite songs on the album is 6 Feet. It's about, has like this elaborate story. It was actually inspired by a story of Dante Gabriele Rossetti and Elizabeth Siddal.
Of course, yeah.
What originally happened to them is that he's been playing around with her for like 10 years, and she overdosed on laudanum because she couldn't stand this anymore. And he, as a sentimental poet, he buried her with a notebook filled with his poems. Yeah. 7 years later, his manager goes like, it's a pity we don't have those poems. How about we...
dig them up.
Yeah. So that's exactly what they did. Yeah. And he wasn't there. And he specifically requested to never bury him next to his family on Highgate because he was afraid that Cyril would kind of revenge. Yeah, and yeah. I mean, I would if I were her. So they buried him somewhere in Kent, I think. So his manager then told him that when they dug her up and opened her casket, the casket was filled with her beautiful crimson hair and she was untouched by time and decay. And was looking just as beautiful as 7 years prior when they put her in there.
Which I'm sure was the case.
Oh, of course. Well, I mean, to be fair, there are some registered cases of this actually happening because of different chemical reactions in the soil. Yeah. But anyway, so he probably said that calm his conscience a little bit. So in my story, it's a little bit different. There is a husband and a wife, and... husband gets tired of his wife and buries her alive on a Highgate, and I actually mentioned Highgate in the song. And then, so the first chorus is the wife waking up inside a coffin and realizing what happened to her. Yeah. And the second part of the song is him singing that his life is starting over and all of that. And I invited a friend to sing the second part because I wanted a male voice there.
Okay.
But as soon as I told him what the song is about, he kind of thought and he went like, I don't think my wife's going to appreciate that. So that's my favorite anecdote from making of the album.
Partly truthful, partly myth story of the people being so paranoid about being buried alive that there would be a bell at the top of the grave that if they woke up that they could ring the bell.
Yeah, well,
on top of the grave.
That's exactly what you see. That's exactly what you see on our cover.
Yeah.
It's called the Safety Coffin Bell, and it's kind of ironic, and I enjoy the irony in this, is that there is not a single registered case of anyone actually being saved by a safety coffin bell. They did exist, and I saw some in different museums. Like, there is one, it looks a little different, but still it's there, in a funeral museum in Vienna, for example, or a medical museum in... Berlin has like this elaborate, beautiful wooden, you know, schemes of how it looked, like tiny models of tiny people lying underground with like a thread.
What to do if you wake up?
It's beautiful.
Instructions, yeah.
Yeah, wonderful. So, and I kind of, because I wanted the cover to kind of send the message that no matter how kind of low you feel and how bad you think everything is, it's never too late to call for help. And then I kind of thought, okay, so well, in the light of this new statistics that I just read about no one actually being saved by the coffin bell, maybe we are our best chances.
Saying goodbye. My-
I'm very fascinated with the history of 19th century in England, and well, more specifically in art.
I guess that informs your music both lyrically and musically.
I think that you might as well just say that it sounds very Russian, because at times I come to think that it does sound very Russian even without us planning on it. We have saxophones and electric guitars. Victorian, is it? Put my finger on it.
Would it be acceptable to write a foreword for this record to explain a little bit about the background and its inspiration to help the listener? Or would it be better to say, no, the artist is dead, you're going to have to pick up what you feel about it? How much are you going to give away?
I kind of like the idea of the artist is dead, but I'm not dead yet. So I guess I kind of started to regret a little bit not writing a foreword for this album as you would say for a theater play that required certain context, because this album, I see it as a little bit of a theater play that does require the context. So because hear a little bit about all of those tiny tragedies of like 19th century that's been sourcing my writing.
When I was a kid, that's how I discovered a lot of about other art from musicians. For example, I wouldn't have read The Go-Between or watched the film without The Go-Betweens telling me that they'd named their band after it. So that's something that you as an artist can spread. Sorry to give you that responsibility.
No, I think that everyone would kind of benefit from actually digging a little deeper into what lies kind of behind this whole album. And because it's just so much, it's just so exciting.
How much of it for you is escapism, though?
About 150%.
And what percentage of it is art and what percentage of it is show business?
Oh, God. Why are you asking me about show business? That's none of my business.
It is.
You're the person selling it. And why we are like this is because we're not very smart.
What a very English way of putting it.
But
self-deprecating is as English as it gets.
Well, I mean, I of course it's a dream of the dreams to have your music kind of paying for your living, but I don't want it to become obligatory. I don't want it to become a burden or a job that I do not like.
Yeah.
I don't want making an album to become a burden because we have deadlines to meet. We always have deadlines to meet, but not for financial reasons. And
that's really interesting, because would that maybe take away some of the art if it became a job?
I am completely sure that it would. The romance would disappear, and it's just very sad. I have to say that, there is a money side to it, which comes with like all of the merchandise. That's why I put all of my energy after the album is done into trying to make everything as pretty as possible, and so that's why we make these beautiful tiny bells that you can actually ring, and like pins and some different kinds of shirts with like designs inspired by 19th century illustrations and pre-raphaelite lights, all that beautiful stuff. All of that comes after the music is done, and music is not written to earn for a living. It's not supposed to be done with this motivation behind it. So how would I write an album that's gonna sell? I mean, that sounds very much like pop music and sell out pop music, and I'm not a fan of that approach.
Okay.
So which I enjoy quite a bit.
Well, of course you couldn't be. Was it the English the British that invented the cemetery that decided? Because there's a real class thing, isn't there, with Victorian cemeteries? Here's the poor bit. Here's the new middle classes. Here's the massive mausoleums. Even in death, we have a class system in England.
Originally, this happened because the graveyard were overflown, and everyone thought that all the epidemics happened because of that, even though epidemics probably happened because everyone dumped their waste into bloody rivers.
Getting into the water system.
So terrible. So so they decided to make cemeteries, and Magnificent Seven came to be this way.
Yeah.
The typical worker could get a spot in a mass grave that would hold up to maybe 20 or so people for a pound, which would be like a weekly salary.
Yeah.
And they could get a 34 letters inscription on the gravestone stating that among all those people, this guy also lies here. Yeah. And that costed like your salary for a week. And yeah. I think it's much more expensive now, actually.
Yeah. Well, it's partly over now. I mean, my grandparents were probably the last people in my family to be buried, to have gravestones. I'm wondering if it's over now. They're full, and of course the real estate is more valuable for housing. I wonder if it's over, the golden era is over.
I think it's a matter of choice, really. I mean, a lot of people are preferring to be cremated nowadays, but I know that on Highgate you still can get a spot for a shit ton of money. There's this huge mausoleum that costed around, what, £5 million? Pounds or something ridiculous like that. It's right next to the entrance to the west side, and it was built in 2005, so relatively kind of not so long ago.
Have you made your masterpiece with this record, do you think?
I'm definitely proud of it, and I know that we worked on top of our abilities, which is the same that I can say about every single record we did.
Yeah.
And I'm very happy, but masterpiece, I think that's something that's yet to come, I should hope,
yeah.
Because it would be very sad if everything that I do from this point would go downhill.
No, fair enough. How are you going to do it live?
I have absolutely no idea. Neither does Gleb.
Excellent.
I know.
That should be interesting. Then.
Well,
are
we still have...
Are there plans to play?
We still have... Yeah, sure. We have a tour coming with Riverside.
Ooh.
And a solo gig in Courtyard Theatre on, I think, 1st of October. I'm so looking forward to that, because playing in London is always such a treat.
Thank you. I Am the Morning. That is called Ghost of a Story. There's a studio film of that online right now. Before that, you heard a clip of 6 Feet. There's a studio film online coming soon of that. And Freak Show. I Am the Morning are playing Zwolle in the Netherlands on the 18th of September before they join Marias Duda's band Riverside, touring through Germany with a stop in Luxembourg before heading to London, as Mariana mentioned, on October the 1st to play the Courtyard Theatre, which is in East London. kscopemusic.com/IATM. And in case you missed it, Anathema are headlining this year's Space Rocks concert at the Indigo at the O2 in London on the 21st of September, joining prog rockers Amplifier, Voyager and Anna Phoebe on the musical bill for this year's event. The band will perform a one-off set in collaboration with globally celebrated Somerset House resident multimedia artist Christina Polyakova and the European Space Agency have worked together to create a unique visual and musical set inspired by space exploration. This unique collaboration is the brainchild of Mr. Vincent Kavanagh, who is developing a special set list for the show that will dovetail with a video art presentation. Also, the anchoress, who, if you follow her on the socials, you'll know is reaching the denouement of her new album. Catherine Ann Davis, professionally known as the anchoress, is playing St John's Church, Cardiff, also on the 21st of September, and we'll be testing some new material on you lucky people. To celebrate, here's the acoustic version of What Goes Around.
Something that you need to hear. For every action in this world, action to be considered. No, it's nothing to do with your karma, my friend. No, it's just scientific, my dear. Oh my God, never will believe that.
Caress, what goes around. Thanks as ever for listening to the K-Scope podcast. Do please like and share us wherever you listen to us. Before I go any further, a call out for votes for our artists in the Prog Awards. Go to loudersound.com/prog and vote K-Scope. Also, K-Scope are proud to be sponsoring the Limelight Award again this year. So if you're looking for the best new music, which isn't on K-Scope, check out the following bands and cast your vote accordingly. In alphabetical order, Cold Bones, Exploring Birdsong, Frequency Drift, Gweno, Joe Quayle, Lost Crowns, Quantum Pig, The Paradox Twin, Valis Ablaze and Wheel are the bands nominated in the Limelight Award category. I'm going to finish with this. Prepare yourself for the new ORK Signals Erased EP, featuring two remixes from Greg Brimson and Adrian Benavides. There's a new video online for the album version of this. Check it out. This is the Greg Brimson remix of Signals Erased. See you soon. Ta-da.
Tomorrow.